Hi, Bagel.
Hi, Moby.
Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Moby.
So we have a lot that we want to talk about today.
Some of it
is sincere and earnest. Some of it is patently ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Some of which I don't know about because you haven't told me what we're talking about yet.
I've got a couple of surprises up my sleevey.
You're wearing a t-shirt that doesn't
tiny,
really have... Okay.
Tiny sleeves.
But the first thing is a secret invitation that is only for now going out to podcast listeners.
If you are listening to this right now, you are getting an extra special transmission treat.
Allow me to explain more. I am going on tour.
Woohoo!
In September in Europe playing...
For our birthdays.
Yeah, but I think I'll be there for my birthday, maybe yours as well.
And mine's 25th, you'll be there.
So that's a big tour, playing big venues like the O2 in London, it's like 18,000 people.
So crazy.
And it's only in Europe. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm saying this like you don't know. You know.
No, I like it. Okay. It's drama and I enjoy that.
So I'm only going to do one U.S. show. And it's a very special type of show because it's very small. It's acoustic with a string section and very interesting guest vocalists. And it's also going to be a live Moby Pod. So
we're recording a live episode of Moby Pod and a lot of music from Play.
It's on May 31st, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be in the old Masonic temple at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Here in Los Angeles, where we live.
And there are only 100 tickets.
Total.
And so we're going to announce it for real this coming Monday. But now, if you're listening to this, that means that you know about this, hopefully a couple days before anyone else will know about it. Because forgive me if this sounds self-aggrandizing or just completely self-involved, but like the show in Antwerp holds 17,000 people and it sold out in a day.
That is so insane. That's like Gaga shit.
So like 17,000 tickets sold out in a day. This is 100 tickets, super intimate. You and Bagel will be hosting.
Mm-hmm.
You and I will be talking about the story of Play. And while we're talking about Play, we're going to be playing acoustic versions of the songs from Play.
Mm-hmm. So if you can get to Los Angeles, go to Moby.com and grab those tickets right now.
So here's what we're going to do. If you go to Moby.com, there's going to be a special button that says Moby Pod Listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You click on aforementioned button and it will take you to a link where you can get 2 tickets. And also, the Hollywood Forever Cemetery is fascinating.
It's so cool. It's a cemetery, fully a cemetery.
Yeah, I mean, everybody from, I think, Johnny Ramone to Rudolph Valentino, so many fascinating people are buried there.
Like, so walking through the graves is so wild.
But this is the Masonic Temple that's within the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Which also has its own kind of lore and mythology.
Yeah, so you will be one of 100 people at this intimate live Moby Pod recording in the Masonic Temple at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. I think I've said that enough times, right?
I think so. And people know where to go. They know to go to Moby.com
and there'll be a button.
And find their special button.
Yeah.
And then they're going to get a couple tickets if they can get to LA for this. So I really hope that you can be there. If you get a ticket and you're coming, send us an email and let us know that you'll be there because we're so happy to have you. We love to do these live events and get to have our listeners come like we did last year.
And it's a very different type of performance than the tour I'm doing in Europe. The tour in Europe is like full band, loud, lights, visuals, craziness.
Fly girls.
Maybe not fly girls. but this is intimate with just like only acoustic instruments, piano, guitar, cello, viola, different guest vocalists. So I hope that you will join us on May 31st, the Masonic Temple at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery for this very special event.
Yay!
What else you want to talk about?
Well, Moby, you love language. You love vocabulary. You love puns. Mm. You love etymology. You love words. And as do I, though I have to say your vocabulary far surpasses anyone that I know.
I don't know. I think I have like 5 fancy words that I just get a lot of use out of.
No, no, no. Every time we have a conversation, you say a word that I'm like, I've known you for so many years and you're pulling out a word. Not only have I never heard from you, but I've never heard period.
Okay, so I think where we're going with this is we're going to do etymology, but I have another fun idea. What if we, for fun, pick words that we wish more people knew so we could use them more often, like or just like super interesting words that we love that are very either like strange or obscure.
You're very good at this. See, I'm not as good as
you have your computer that. Though. You could be looking it up.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true.
This but excites
you, me. You have this. You have a laundry list of fascinating weird words.
Yeah.
So I would love for you to go through them because mine.
And also, there's a good chance that the words I pick might be wrong. Like I've been wrong before. Okay, so how about to start? One of my favorite words, eschatological. And you can look it up if you want to
Does
make sure.
Does that mean like the history of the story of fishes?
It should mean the story of fishes, but it actually is pertaining to the apocalypse or the end of days.
And illogical means?
The word, like it's from the Greek logos.
Yeah, yeah.
So eschatological. So an eschatology is like the study of the end of days.
Okay.
Do you want to just double check?
Relating to death, judgment, and the final destiny of the soul and humankind. So you could study eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
Eschatology? Yeah.
Isn't that a fun word?
Yeah. That seems like something Angelina Jolie would have studied in the late 90s. You know what I mean? When she was wearing the blood?
Oh, when she was making out with her brother?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one of my favorite words that unfortunately very few people seem to know. Because what a good one. What a dramatic word.
Eschatological.
Yeah.
And you don't get to use it a lot.
I mean, except these days, everything's eschatological. It's like the climate is eschatological, antibiotic resistance, ends of democracy, microplastics, like just we're living in eschatological times.
Yeah, it's dark and sad, but also kind of beautiful.
And dramatic. Okay, yeah. Do you have a word?
Something that I do really love is like I think old slang is really funny, not necessarily
like,
words, but like
23 Skidoo or Hung the Moon.
Or like there's like an old Victorian, I think it's Victorian slang from like the late 1800s. When you're drunk, you say like, he's got a brick in his hat. That guy's drunk. He's got a brick in my hat. I got a brick in my hat.
I mean, it makes
hat.
Sense because you're kind of like stumbling around like you've got like this giant heavy thing in your head. Okay, so Victorian slang for you're drunk, you got a brick in your hat.
Yeah, it's really funny to me.
Okay, so one last one before we get to etymology. Mm-hmm. There's a word that I love. It's not dramatic. It's not that interesting, but it's actually a word that describes what the word is. It's a really interesting word. And if you say it, it sounds like you're saying a wrong word. And the word is practicable. Have you ever heard this word? No one uses the word practicable.
When I hear the word practicable,
it sounds like someone with a brick in their hat trying to say practical.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not practicably drunk. So practicable.
Uh-huh.
So practical, as we know, like to say like, do you want to go up the mountain? And you're like, well, it's not really that practical. Meaning like, we got stuff to do. I got to be at work. So it's just not a very practical thing to do. Practicable means, can we go up the mountain? Like, is it actually achievable? Do we have shoes? Do we actually know where the mountain is? Is there a road? It's the basics of like, can something be achieved?
Wow. Practicable. Is it practical? No, I mean, that makes sense. I kind of like it.
Can you look it up just because I want to be double checked?
Practicable. Able to be done or put into practice successfully.
Yeah.
You done it.
It's such a good word.
Your explanation was apparently practicable.
Thank you. Okay, so now we have probably lost or alienated everyone listening was like, I'm going to get stories about the Dalai Lama and I'm going to hear about touring. And instead we're deconstructing eschatology and practicable and learning Victorian slang. So there are 5 people who are enjoying this. Everybody else has turned off.
I don't know. I trust our people a little bit more.
Okay.
So I have some etymological fun things that I would like to share with you that I think are cool. And then I would love it if you would share some etymological things that you think are cool.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Get ready to be blown away.
Okay.
There's a new conjunction, and it's very rare for a new conjunction to show up in a language because we have our fixed conjunctions.
Is it turnt?
No, but okay. Close. Our conjunctions now are fanboys. Fanboys. For, and, nor, but, or yet so. Fanboys are the existing conjunctions, but we have a new one. Slash.
Oh, like interesting.
Actor slash model, or I want to sleep slash snack.
That's so interesting. Is hyphen also a new conjunction?
You can use it as a conjunction, but I think slash is the one that people are recognizing as like, it's more common in the current vernacular is slash. Isn't that interesting?
It's not etymology per se, but it's really interesting.
Well, it's a word thing that I find to be very interesting. Not all of this is etymology,
and
but some of it is.
And there is, if we haven't lost everyone listening, this next bit absolutely will. There's descriptive versus prescriptive language rules.
Okay.
But basically, one says, this is language, this is how you have to use it. And the other says, this is language, this is how people use it. We will now change the dictionary to reflect that.
I love that. I love that language is constantly evolving, and the internet has had a lot to do with how language evolves.
There's a great book about that by Bill Bryson called English and How It Got That Way. And it's about the weird origin of, like, for example, certain words, especially portmanteaus, where they combine two words, were seen as like horrifying by the grammarians and the English scholars of the day. Like the word automobile, heresy. Like apparently people were like, that is not a real word. Or weekend, same thing.
Well, then they would have hated my next thing, which is, for instance, the word deadass. You know how people will say deadass? Like if they're super serious, they'll be like, I went to the store and all the lights were out. Deadass. They're both intensifiers. And sometimes intensifiers for words can take on their own meanings. Like, that's a sweet ass Prius. You just mean that's a
no one has ever said that. Yeah.
That's a sweet Prius.
Yeah.
But sweet ass, like, has become its own kind of like exclamation.
Okay.
Or sweet becomes its own exclamation. Or like, you know, I'm dead tired. Dead so, becomes like dead wrong, dead serious.
Okay, so dead ass.
It's basically, I find it to be very interesting how in the English language, intensifiers can become their own meaningful words.
Okay.
I really love that.
Are there any other historical examples you can think of?
Okay. So like when you say, I'm dead tired.
Mm-hmm.
If I say I'm dead,
you know what you're saying. Yeah.
So the intensifier becomes its own meaning. Yeah.
Well, that is one thing I'm constantly thinking about regarding language, especially the English language, is how anyone ever learns it.
Mm-hmm.
Like earlier you mentioned slash as a conjunction that is now part of an accepted lexicon, but it also means to cut something violently.
Mm-hmm.
And in the UK, colloquially, it means to urinate.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
So how, like, I just think of all these, or there's one sound in particular, and maybe we've talked about this before, but there's one English language little collection of letters that makes me wonder how anyone ever learns to speak English. O-U-G-H.
Like, though, bow, ought.
Rough.
Yeah.
How does anyone know, like, if you're learning English as a second language and you see O-G-H, like, through, it also is drought.
Mm-hmm.
Through the drought, there was a bow that was rough.
Yeah.
It's all these different sounds with the same letters, so.
But that's why this is, because when someone, if you were to say to someone, I'm dead, they'd be, like, deeply concerned if they didn't understand the connotation within the English language. But also because you could say, like, badass, which are two objectively bad things. Like if something is ass or bad, you would think that they're not good. And then suddenly you put them together as their own intensifiers, and they mean something that is really great.
Poor everybody.
But I have one more that I think you will actually really like. That's a little bit more etymological than the other ones I was talking about. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The word zero, which I think is a really interesting word.
I assume it's Greek.
So it's a weird word because zero came later than all the other numbers. Like if you look at the Chinese symbols for 1, 2, 3, they're just horizontal, one horizontal line, two horizontal line, three. But then if you look at zero, it's a much more complex character because it's not a counting word. The word for zero in Chinese comes from the word drizzle because rain is fragmentary and zero is a fragmentary number, which I think is absolutely fascinating. But our words in English, 1 to 10, come from like the Proto-European numbers. But those were made before the concept of zero even existed. So we borrowed the concept of zero from the Arabic number system, the word sifir, which means empty and comes from the Sanskrit word for desert. But then the word zero is also related to the word cipher, which comes from
blank.
Which comes from the Arabic word for zero, because zero is hard to comprehend. Mm-hmm. So cipher is kind of like secret code because it's, you know, mysterious or hard to understand, like the concept of zero was when this language was coming together.
That is really interesting.
I think it's so interesting.
It's also interesting how much I didn't know that how many number related words come from Arabic.
Yeah.
Like algebra being a good one. Okay. So we've had a good time with our etymology.
Do you want to talk about any etymology things?
The only one, I don't even know if it's etymological, but it's just interesting, is I'll use by way of example the word sumptuous. This is also pertaining to how, I don't know how anyone learns English.
Sumptuous meaning thick and sassy.
Sumptuous is like, oh, like indulgent and luxurious. Okay, then tell me about the word presumptuous.
It means
to presume.
Assuming.
So here's what's confusing. Sumptuous, presumptuous should ideally mean before being sumptuous. But they're two different, completely different words with different roots. So presumptuous is from the root sumer, which means to know. So to presume is before knowing, like to claim knowledge before knowing. It has nothing to do with sumptuous, even though it's the exact same word.
Whoa.
Isn't that weird?
I think that's weird.
So now I'm sure that we have lost every single person who'd been listening at the beginning.
No, I think they love it.
Okay.
And if they don't, that's okay. You don't have to love everything we do, but it'd be cooler if you did. I would love to talk about, this is something that we don't do a lot, Mo, and I feel like we should start getting into the habit of maybe doing it more, which is stuff that we really love.
Like
stuff that we love, like books, TV shows, music, products, food brands or drinks or anything. Like,
okay,
what do you love right now?
I think, there's a 30 Rock episode where Liz Lemon takes sleeping pills and hallucinates that she's sitting next to Oprah on a plane. And it turns out she's sitting next to a 14-year-old girl. But she thinks it's Oprah.
Good.
And so when she gets off the plane, she basically repeats everything that the 14-year-old girl has said as one of Oprah's favorite things. Because apparently Oprah
Did Oprah actually come on the show?
Oprah was...
Oprah. She played herself.
Oprah, but it turns out it was a 14-year-old girl.
Right.
Liz Lemon was just hallucinating.
Okay. So that's really fun.
But that's when I learned, I think Oprah does a thing where she like picks her favorite thing.
She does. Also, I think like Reese Witherspoon does it.
Okay.
Like, it's a thing.
So we're being inspired by Oprah and Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah, but also
so we've either reached a new high or a new middle. I can't figure it out.
Here's the thing. Here's what the girlies say. I don't gatekeep.
Uh-oh.
Gatekeeping meaning if you love something and you aren't sharing it with the people who listen to you or care about what you think. So we ain't gatekeeping no more.
Okay. I guess in the Bible, they would say, like, don't keep your light under a bushel.
Exactly. That's exactly. It's more biblical, I think, what we're doing here.
Okay. So we're not gatekeeping our lights under a bushel. We're going to talk about things that we love.
Yeah.
If you brought this up, that makes me think that maybe there's something that you love that you want to talk about.
There's a lot of stuff I love.
And we're not allowed to be general. Like, I love trees. Like, I'm not allowed to say, like, hey, my favorite is trees. Like, you're talking more like...
Not like cultural things or things that people can also, you know, go out and maybe enjoy themselves.
Great.
TV shows.
Okay.
Music, whatever. Can be free, can be not free.
Okay.
Do you want me to save mine?
Yeah, but
do you want to save yours?
Mine are all old. I don't have anything new.
You don't have new books?
I've been rereading all my old favorite books, so I don't have... So, yeah. So, I mean, I have lots of stuff that I love, but honestly, everything I... Like, my cultural world right now is definitely a little antiquated, but I'm happy to... I'm perfectly, in a non-gatekeeping, unapologetic way, happy to share what I love. Just keep in mind, it's all stuff that's a little older.
Okay, well, some of my stuff is not exactly new. Like a book that I'm loving, that I'm reading right now by Kazuo Ishiguro, who wrote Remains of the Day. It's called Clara and the Sun. And I'm bringing it up to share in general, but also because I think you would really like it, because it's from the point of an AI named Clara, who is charged by the sun. And she has this like really sweet power of observation, and she's so curious about humans, but she just wants to find like her forever home. And there's just like a gentleness to this AI, and she's, you know, she just spends every day watching humans and trying to figure out how they work and trying to like find her place within the human world. And there's something so like devastating and beautiful about it, but it's also like, it's a lot of stuff I love, like it's, you know, it's sci-fi, suspense, mystery, but also like coming of age, like of a robot. But it's really good.
Okay, what's it called again?
Clara and the Sun.
Okay, great.
By Kazuo Ishiguro. So good. Highly recommend. But also something that we were listening to today that I think a lot of people might discount Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
They might say it's just a pop album or it's just a country album and I have no interest.
I'm going to weigh in as well.
Yeah.
I did an interview earlier with a French magazine, and he was asking me about new records that I liked. And I said, well, this might sound strange. I really like some of the new Beyonce record. And he rolled his eyes with the same way I would have. Like I when I heard she was making a country record, I was like, well, I assume it's going to be sort of ironic, kind of goofy, like, but it's not. I mean, I only heard a few of the songs.
There's
but like,
27 tracks.
Oh boy. But some of them were like, it's like alt country from the 70s. Like some of the productions almost reminded me, I was like, it reminded me a little bit of Beck's Sea Changes thematically, but it also, it felt like that early 70s acoustic alt country, and her voice sounds amazing. I have to say, I liked it 1,000 times more than I thought I would.
It's so special, and I hope you hear all the rest of the songs. Like there's a part where she sings opera beautifully, but also she covers Blackbird. She covers Jolene in a way that I just love so much, because I always felt like, I mean, obviously Dolly's version is perfection, but she takes a little bit more of like an aggro version of it, and it's very satisfying. But also she samples Nancy Sinatra. It's all over the place. Okay. It covers so much. Willie Nelson's on the album. Like it's really special.
Yeah, I gotta say, the limited amount that I heard, I liked more than I thought I would in a way that I was kind of taken aback by.
I love that. Yeah. So just to say, if you were thinking that you weren't a Beyonce fan, maybe give this one a go because it's a special album. But also, I mean, I could go on about stuff I love. Do you want to share some stuff you love?
Sure.
Good. Go.
What immediately comes to mind that I've recently rediscovered is David Lynch's Mulholland Drive.
Because you love lesbianism?
No, it's not. There is, spoiler alert,
there's some lesbianism.
A sapphic scene. But I had sort of, because I mean, I love the David Lynch movies, especially the ones that get weirder and weirder, like Fire Walk With Me and Inland Empire, Lost Highway, like all of them are flawless. In fact, I might rewatch Lost Highway tonight. In fact, I'm going to rewatch Lost Highway tonight.
Hell yeah.
Oh, have you seen Lost Highway?
No.
It's so good. It's one of the most perfect LA movies.
Okay. Yeah. I know. I want to watch it.
But Mulholland Drive, I don't know if it was supposed to be a movie. It was supposed to be the beginning of a TV show that he then, my limited understanding is it was canceled as a TV show, so he turned it into a movie. And it is so special. And it has some of the scenes are so experimental and so unsettling. Like, and it all takes place in our neighborhood. Like if you watch it, you're like, oh, I know that street. Like one of the most disconcerting scenes takes place at the ranch, you know,
in the Hollywood.
Yeah. The one at the top
Valley
of,
ranch?
What's that road?
I don't know the name of the road, but yes, I know what you're talking about.
So I just recently rewatched Mulholland Drive and I was like, oh my God, like it's so dark. There's some scenes that are so scary, truly upsetting and scary. And the narrative resolution at the end is really grim. Fascinating, but spoiler alert, but it kind of, the revelation of the narrative at the end is very au courant to our current zeitgeist.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's a teaser if I've ever heard one. I'm teased.
And Naomi Watts is great in it.
She's always great.
But this is, it's really special.
Okay. I'll watch that one. That's a good one. Are there any interesting soaps you'd like to talk about? Like an interesting soap you've used?
I no. Should there? Don't make me. You make me uncomfortable. I bathe. Why? What are you implying?
No. I'm not trying. It's not a bath shaming.
I do bathe. I just only ever use one product,
which is.
But it's the same product that my mom and her hippie friends used in the 60s.
So you've been using it for generations.
It's just that, why would I get something else? It's fine. It's organic.
Because you love.
I don't even love it. I just use Dr. Bronner's.
There you go.
But I also use it to like clean my toilets. Like it's good
for everything. You can use it for anything.
Yeah. And then if you get bored, you can read the text. If you've never read the text on a Dr. Bronner's bottle, they've had to edit it. It used to say that you could use the soap as birth control. It actually did say, Dr. Bronner's, they would have text on the label that said, like, here are the things you can use it for, like a mouthwash. Oh, no, you don't want to use it as a mouthwash.
I wouldn't.
And you could use it as birth control. I think they had to take that out because clearly no one should be using soap as birth control. But nonetheless, it's a great soap. You know how many ingredients it has? 3.
That's how you know it's good.
Yeah, it's like water, soap, and oil.
I've been living that Bronner's life, not fully.
Yeah,
I'm getting there.
That's my.
But I love. It's because of you that I'm living even a partial Bronner's life.
But and again, I don't want to endorse it necessarily, but it's the only thing I've ever used, and I'm like, why would I? Why try anything else? I don't need products. And I'm feeling judged.
No, don't feel judged.
No, I'm feeling judged by the people listening.
They're not. Wow, that is projection.
I'm feeling judged by myself.
Okay. Well, I think it's
only
great.
Bagel isn't judging me.
I don't know.
It's just we live in a world where everybody has so many products and things. I feel kind of inadequate that I have one.
No. I think it's
wonderful.
I brush
my teeth with a toothpaste.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. It's also Dr. Bronner's toothpaste.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's organic.
You have a brand you love. I think that is wonderful to have a brand that you love.
But I don't even love it. I just like that it's simple and smells okay.
Okay. Here's one thing I want to say.
Okay, I'm going to take it back. I don't feel judged. I just feel kind of defensive and inadequate in a world where everyone has a million brands. I have a brand.
Well, I love it. I love that you love the simplicity of it. And I think that a lot of people just want simple. And so for those people, it's great.
Okay. So what else is on your list of things we should talk about?
Well, I thought
today?
We could do a couple of fun things,
uh-oh,
like a little fun game.
Oh, boy.
I just want to do one finish the lyric because we talked about Beyonce. And so I just wanted to throw a little Beyonce finish the lyric in there.
Okay.
But also, as I was looking, because I knew I wanted to do this and I was looking at the top 40s to see like what songs are popular right now. And it was really depressing for me because I didn't know a lot of the artists on the top 40s.
Probably for the best.
I don't know. I felt like, oh, man, I've jumped the shark of my like cultural awareness.
I mean, I'm not the person to ask about it, but it does seem like a lot of top 40 music is kind of designed for 15-year-olds with attention deficit disorder who are like DMing while checking social media and making a TikTok. Like, I feel like the main criteria for pop music now is how does it work on TikTok?
Yeah.
Like, can you add it to a video of someone falling off a skateboard?
Yeah. Or can you do a little dance to it? Which there are a lot of dances to the song that I've picked today.
Because I try occasionally to go listen to modern pop music, and it means nothing to me. Except for the occasionally, like some track will come through and I'll be like, oh, I like that. But for the most part, it's just, I don't want to be a cranky old guy, too much of a cranky old guy, but so much pop music just feels so manufactured and lifeless.
Well, it is, I think, by design, honestly. Because it's also not really about the music anymore. It's about not across the board, but I think for a lot of people, it's about the aesthetic of the artist and the video that comes along with it and the branding that comes along with the video and it's more of like part of a marketing system as opposed
like
to
I don't even think of it as music anymore.
Yeah.
To me, it's like it's manufactured product.
Yeah.
So, okay, but we're going to finish a lyric.
We're going to finish a lyric from Cowboy Carter. From the single from Cowboy Carter. Okay.
Is that Beyonce?
That's the name of her album that just came out.
Oh, okay.
Okay, here's the lyric. This ain't Texas, ain't no hold'em, so lay your blank down, 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 down.
Lay your vegan anchovy paste. Lay your NASCAR t-shirt. Lay your water bottle. Until someone stops me, I'm just going to keep...
No, this is really fun for me, so I hope you keep going.
Lay your grapefruit. Lay your circular from Costco. So far, I'm thinking grapefruit sandwich or circular from Costco. Let's just, because it's America, let's go with circular from Costco.
Circular?
Circular. It's like those mail outs from Costco. They're called circulars. You didn't know that? Everybody knows that. Yeah, circulars. So lay your mail out circular from Costco, where they advertise things from Costco.
Okay. No, you're wrong and not close.
Not grapefruit.
Well, actually, mail out might be close-ish. This ain't Texas, ain't no hold'em. So lay your cards down. Down, down, down. Like,
that's
hold'em.
Boring.
Like,
it should be grapefruit.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a little bit non sequitur.
Like, imagine you're playing,
people,
like,
guessing.
People are playing cards, and it's like, okay, I see you're 17, and I raise you a grapefruit, and you put your grapefruit down. It's like, and then you're like turning over, I don't know how to play cards, and you're turning over your cards, and you're like, 6, 4, and then across the table from you is a surrealist, and they're like, grapefruit.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense for that scenario. But also, there's like a world, like a post-apocalyptic world where like a grapefruit could hold more value than like a chip or any sort of like other bartering tool.
Oh, I think basically everything in the natural world will hold more value than anything humans make in the post-apocalyptic world. Like imagine like the apocalypse has happened, everyone's starving, and someone says, oh, look at this $40 million painting. And people are like, well, you can't eat it and you can't sleep under it, so who cares?
Yeah. Let's burn it.
Let's throw it at the tribe who was trying to steal our sneakers.
Exactly. Okay, I thought that it might be fun to do another little segment that we haven't done in a while that always makes me laugh a lot, which is where I force you to give a compliment to someone who's objectively terrible.
Okay, someone comes to mind.
Well, I have to tell you the person, because if you pick, then that's cheating.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. You have to give a compliment.
That's me just, I know it's going to go wrong. I'm already scared.
It's political.
Things are so scary. Politically things are scary, but also I don't know what you're going to say. Like, what are you going to, go ahead.
You have to compliment Ronna McDaniel.
Okay.
Former chair of the RNC.
Okay, that's kind of an easy one that might not even be that interesting.
How do you compliment her?
I compliment her or as many people might know, she got hired to be a commentary on NBC. NBC News. Commentator. I say things and I don't even know what I'm saying. So she got hired to be a common potato.
You got a brick in your hat.
And on NBC News, and she was very quickly fired because everyone at NBC News was like, you've just hired this anti-free press election denier.
Who promoted the fake electors, yeah.
Basically, she broke the law and tried to overturn democracy, and then suddenly she's being hired as a common potato at NBC News. And so they all basically rebelled. Like, all the anchors, like Chuck Todd and everyone, were like, basically, keep her and lose us.
Yeah, Rachel Maddow did a whole beautiful piece about how absurd it was and mystifying that they would do something like
that.
And
it wasn't just partisan bullying. Like, they were saying, like, yeah, sure, have a diversity of voices, have Republicans, have Democrats, have left, have right, but you can't have people who actively tried to overthrow an election and end democracy.
And then when asked about it, she said, you know, I was just taking one for the team, playing for the team. And it's like, but how does that make, that doesn't make it okay. You still did it.
Yeah.
Something that feels so criminal and so loathsome.
So the compliment I have for her is that last Sunday when she was on NBC News, she did say that Joe Biden won the election. And of course, that doesn't make up for her being awful. That doesn't make up for her doing her best to overthrow end democracy and overthrow the election. But I feel like when you have a lot of these election deniers finally admitting what they've known all along, that Trump lost the last election.
Mm-hmm.
It just moves the needle further and further away from Trump being able to claim that he won the last election.
Yeah. Or so, when, like, you find out that Tucker Carlson had been texting people like, I know this guy's full of shit, essentially. Like, that, it moves the needle in the direction of, like, oh, all of these people are playing a role. They're playing a character.
Only the true dimwits or the truly deluded believe that Trump won the last election. Like, everybody else all along has known full well that their criteria was, oh, if I say that he won the election, I keep my job. Which is so disgusting. It's kind of like saying, like, it's like saying, oh, if I work at the concentration camp, at least I have employment. Like, you know.
Yeah. It's so very much along those lines. And yeah, I'm so happy that all those anchors spoke out.
But that's my compliment for her.
Yeah, that's
a good
compliment.
At least she did finally admit that, yes, Joe Biden won the last election. And of course, she's terrible, and she lied for years, and she did her best to end democracy, but at least she finally admitted that Biden won the last election.
Unfortunately, the damage has been done.
Yeah.
And she will never, ever take accountability for all of how corrosive her tenure as chair of the RNC was. But, you know, at least she did that.
Mm-hmm. So something I wanted to bring up.
What's that?
Touring.
Well, that's what I was going to talk about next.
Okay, wow. Synchronicity.
We're so on the same page. High five. So what I wanted to talk about, there's a lot of things I want to talk about the tour, but we'll try to keep it brief.
We're not talking about May 31st. May 31st is the live Moby Pod for 100 select Moby Pod listeners.
You, that's you.
Yeah.
We're talking about the big tour and the big European tour in September, the Play 25th anniversary tour. You've toured for such a long time in your life. I mean, when was your first big world tour?
Well, okay, the first tour I did involved going to Ohio in 1983 with my punk rock band, the Vatican Commandos, and we played in the pizza parlor. I don't think that counts.
It's pretty cool, but no.
So the first actual, like, leave my home, go play a whole bunch of shows far away. The first time I did that was 1991.
Whoa.
Obviously playing raves and playing underground nightclubs, but still it was,
a proper tour.
Amsterdam one day, Prague the next day, Berlin the next day, London the next day, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow, 1991. So,
yes.
And then you've done many tours since then. So you've been touring for a long, long time. And now you haven't toured for a long time. When it's been, what,
about 10 years?
10 years since your last tour. So my question to you is twofold.
Your questions are always fine, but they always scare me. What's wrong with me that I'm scared of questions?
I don't know, because I feel like I'm on your side. I'm on your team.
I work under the assumption that I am just a vulnerable, delicate little man in a hostile world, but please go on.
No, I'm on your side.
Okay.
Because you've been on tour for so long, do you have, and I'm sure you have a gazillion, but maybe for my benefit, our benefit today, you might have some very fun, like, tour stories.
Oh boy.
A tour story, but also I would love to know, like, after we get some tour stories, if there's anything that worries you about that you're deeply concerned about. Obviously, aside from the insomnia, but if there's other things that worry you about going on
tour stories. I mean, 20 some odd years of touring, obviously there's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of repetition as well. Oh, you know, I was actually just thinking about this the other day. I do have one super oddball, interesting tour story.
Okay, great.
This is about, let's say, maybe it was like 15, 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on tour. And oftentimes when you're on tour, you take little breaks. Like if you're going from Europe to North America, you come back to North America for 3 days before going back on tour in North America. Or if you're going to, like, South America to Australia, I'd go back to New York, wait for 4 days, then go to the airport and go to Australia. So I got the most random email, and it was someone I'd never met before saying, hey, do you want to have breakfast with the Dalai Lama? And I was like, of course I do. That's so interesting. Like, I was like, is this real? Is this legitimate? And I looked at my schedule And it was to have breakfast with the Dalai Lama in between two tours. Like I was going from Europe to Australia and was going to be home in New York for 3 days.
So it really timed out perfectly.
And it was going to be in Philadelphia. So basically they said, sure, come down to the Four Seasons Hotel in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and have breakfast with the Dalai Lama and ask him anything you want. And they're like, we're going to film it. And I just was like, what in the world? Like, I don't know these people. Of course I'm going to go to Philadelphia to talk to the Dalai Lama. And then they contextualized it a bit more. And they said, we're asking a few other musicians. And we think that Serge from System of a Down will also be there. And the singers, Katie Tunstall and Joss Stone.
I love them.
And I was like, okay. And then they said, and there's a chance Snoop Dogg will swing by.
Whoa.
So this all starts to sound like a mescaline trip or some like strange mm-hmm. hallucination.
It does.
And I was like, okay, sure. I will take Amtrak down to Philadelphia. I'll book myself a room at the Four Seasons and wake up bright and early and have breakfast with Serge from System of a Down and Snoop Dogg and the Dalai Lama and Katie Tunstall and Joss Stone.
Just a typical Thursday.
Yep. So I wake up 8 a.m., which is very early in those days, go downstairs and there's all these security people and I'm shepherded into a room with Joss Stone, Katie Tunstall, and Serge from System of a Down. None of us have met each other, so we all become instant best friends. And because we're all in the same boat, like, what are we doing here? Who has invited us here? What in the world is going on? And then all these Tibetan monks start coming in and then the mood changes very dramatically and the Dalai Lama walks in. And the Dalai Lama walks up to Serge and starts playing with his beard because Serge had a very interesting beard. And the Dalai Lama was just obsessed with Serge Tankian and Serge from System of a Down, starts playing with his beard. And then we all sit down. Turns out it wasn't really breakfast. It was just like an early morning conversation. There was breakfast, but no one ate it because it's like, you know, garbage hotel, like muffins and crappy orange juice. Mm-hmm. So we all get to have conversations with the Dalai Lama. And then Snoop Dogg shows up and he's not going to be part of the conversation. He just shows up to say hi and takes pictures with all of us and the Dalai Lama. Keep in mind, the Dalai Lama is very small. Sir Snoop Dogg is very tall. So just seeing them together made me think, okay, this is not happening. I'm on some sort of new type of psychedelic and this is just a hallucination. So then I got to talk to the Dalai Lama, who I've never met, and I asked him a few questions, like, how do you think Westerners misinterpret Buddhism? But my favorite question that made him laugh out loud, and I feel like I had to have earned some good karmic points by making the Dalai Lama laugh out loud. Like, he laughed hard. I said, if you weren't the Dalai Lama, what would you want your day job to be? So the Dalai Lama grabs my hand. I have a picture of us holding hands while he's answering the question. And he says, if I weren't the Dalai Lama, I would be a professional sleeper, which is such an interesting play on words. Because one, he was saying, it's really early and I'm tired. Like I would just sleep. But also in the world of spirituality, like enlightenment is also called awakening. So he was almost saying like if I wasn't the Dalai Lama, I would be professionally unenlightened. And he thought this was hysterical and he laughed and laughed and he has the most open, infectious, wonderful laugh. So yeah, so that's touring related in that it was like musicians and technically I was on tour. I just took
hiatus.
A little day trip down to Philadelphia to meet the Dalai Lama and Serge and Snoop Dogg and team.
And you made him laugh.
And I made him laugh hard.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very cool tour-ish story. Anything else?
And I got maybe between now and tour time, we can just talk about tour-related stuff because there's a lot of stories.
Just drop a little story every time we feel like it.
But there's a lot of repetition too. Like a lot of just like being in hotel rooms, watching CNN, because oftentimes that was the only English language programming you could get, finding out where you could buy soy milk, etc.
Well, you know, I'm sure there's other stories in there that we will get to at some point.
Okay.
But what about what you're worried about? Are there things about this tour that are concerning to you? Because I know that sleep is a concern and we've talked about it a lot, but is there anything other than that you're worried about? Like what if you're What about all your costumes and getting all of your interesting costumes across
the
ocean? Well,
my costume will probably be a pair of trousers and a t-shirt.
Okay.
Dark color, like dark gray or black, because it's...
And you won't change throughout the course of the show?
I mean, come on. I'm 58 years old. Like, no one
Cher is like way older and she changes clothes like 400 times.
But I don't even have that many clothes. Like, I'll be wearing normal-ish clothes.
Okay.
But to
Bronner style.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. Bronner style.
But to your question about, like, you know, there's one thing that worries me a little bit.
Tell.
I was doing an interview recently and someone asked me if I was worried that going on tour would make me like be tempted to drink or do drugs. And the answer is no, not in the slightest.
That would never occur to me as something. Yeah. You are so committed to.
Yeah, I've been sober for a long time and I have the interest to drink or do drugs. It's gone.
Yeah.
So who knows? It could come back, but I'm not too worried about that. You know what I'm worried about is ego. Because in the past, like when I toured, if I'm being honest, like ego was a big part of touring.
Well, you know, I mean, it makes sense. You're going on stage every night and having thousands of people yell at you that you're great and you are the kind of center of not only attention from the audience in front of you, but also from the entire band behind you and the entire crew behind them and the entire management behind that, like the venue, like you are the center of everything.
Yeah, so it's very easy to buy into that, especially as I think is true for most public figures. Like if you buy into that, if you have this need to feel special, or if you have the need to feel more special than others, that's the really worrying part.
Mm-hmm.
Is one, it's gross, as we know. Like, I mean, just look at the world of social media, public figures. Like when people feel that sense of entitlement or feel somehow that they are removed from or more special than others. Like it's very distasteful.
Yeah.
But the bigger question is, where does it come from? You know, in my case, all I know is it came, this might seem like an overly simplistic answer, it came from insecurity and feelings of inadequacy. Like I thought like, okay, if I'm on the receiving end of all this attention, if my name is on posters, and if people are being extra nice to me, like finally that gives me like a feeling of adequacy. Like finally, like I've gotten to the place where everyone else already is of feeling confident and adequate. But then you start to rely on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you start to, you almost feel the need, you know, the need to be on the receiving end of that much attention. Like without that, you start to feel even more inadequate and less worthy. And it's a really pernicious, corrosive, unhealthy thing. But it's also the indulging ego is gross. Like ego is there. We all have it, except for Bagel. and that's my concern is like, I don't, because I really like the simplicity of my life right now.
Yeah.
You know, I like, you know, like tomorrow is Saturday and my plan is like, I haven't cleaned my bathrooms in a while. And so I'm going to clean the toilets and I'm pretty good at cleaning toilets and cleaning bathrooms. Like I like that. I'm going to clean the kitchen because I cleaned my kitchen last week, but it's been 7 days. So going grocery shopping, cleaning toilets, going hiking, hanging out with Bagel, doing normal stuff that isn't ego driven.
Yeah.
I really like that. And it's not granted this tour is brief, but I do worry a little bit about once again being on the receiving end of attention that might whisper terrible thoughts to my ego.
But do you feel like having this awareness going into a tour like this gives you a bit of a leg up on how that could potentially like creep into your consciousness?
I hope so. And also this little tour, it's the exception, not the rule. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I'm leaving the normal life that I inhabit my life is inhabited 365 days a year and it's normal and it's simple. And if I take a break from it for 10 days, this is the paradigm. This is the, you know, this is the dominant paradigm or, you know, archetype for me is being normal and cleaning my toilets.
Yeah.
And if I take a break from it, I'm not going to like take a break and suddenly be like going to strip clubs and wanting people to idolize me. I'm going to take a break and I'm going to play music that hopefully people will like. Remind myself that my goal is to be of service and raise money for animal rights organizations. And then when it's done, come home and clean toilets.
Yeah, I mean, it's a concept that I think most people will never, ever have to spend a lot of time thinking about, because most people will never be on the receiving end of that amount of physical human energy enjoying their product. You know,
the only thing I will say, I agree with you, but I will say, I think that the number of people being on the receiving end of, we'll call it like third party attention, ego fueling attention, it's definitely more now than it used to be because of 100%. Social media, you know, yeah. like someone in Indiana can post something about a good skateboard trick and all of a sudden they have like thousands of people
watching them do skateboard tricks. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, I think a lot more people have had that experience of being on the receiving end of ego fueling attention.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand how seductive it is, but also ultimately it doesn't last. And anyone who takes it too seriously, it's kind of grotesque.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are battling insecurity in one way or another. And I think a lot of people assume that validation from others is the magic bullet that will kill the insecurity,
mm-hmm.
when really it just feeds maybe more negative part of how we view ourselves and our position in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm looking forward to going on tour, and I'm looking forward to playing music. The people I'm going on tour with, like Julie and Jonathan, they're really looking forward to it. So I'm happy that they get to go on tour and have a fun experience. Mm-hmm. But then I'm also looking forward to it ending and coming home and hiking and cleaning toilets. I know I keep saying cleaning toilets. I'm really good at cleaning toilets.
I know. Also, something that I haven't seen the proof of it, but you've bragged about it in a way that I think is really fun, which is baseboards
yeah.
It's like kind of your part of your journey is learning how to be a better baseboard cleaner. And I really like that about you.
The tops of baseboards, especially.
Yeah.
Because they collect a lot of dust.
They collect so much dust.
And so what I've tried to, because baseboards are not fun. I mean, you look at a room, there's a lot of baseboards. So now what I've been doing is like twice a year, I have baseboard time. It's my thing to do, like go through the house, clean every baseboard. Or if I'm on a really tedious Zoom call with someone, turn off the camera and clean baseboards in the room I'm in.
It makes a lot of sense.
So we've been rambling on. Can I repeat myself about the May 31st concert?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Okay, so once again, as I said about 500 times in the beginning of the show, May 31st in the Masonic Temple at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, me and Lindsay and Bagel will be doing a live Moby Pod concert with string section and piano and acoustic music and singers talking about the history of play and also playing the songs from play. And there are only going to be 100 tickets. On Monday, we're going to make them available for everyone, and I assume they'll go pretty quickly. But before then, we're only available for Moby Pod listeners. When you go to Moby.com and you click on the button that says Moby Pod listeners, it's not even going to say Moby Pod ticket thing. It's just going to say Moby Pod listeners.
It's only for the if you know, you know crowd.
Yeah. And hopefully we will see you then on May 31st, but we'll talk to you many times between now and May 31st.
Oh, yeah.
Lynn, would you like to say goodbye?
I would, but before we do that, I want to say thank you to Bagel for sleeping on me this entire time, mm-hmm. in a most adorable fashion. I want to thank Mike Fermansky for editing the video. I want to thank Jonathan Nezvadba, who is such a fantastic editor of this podcast, and his voice is heard in it, even though his like voice isn't heard in it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Jonathan. And I want to say thank you to Human Content for sending this podcast out into the little particles that land in your phone bits.
And thank you to everyone listening. And I hope you can get tickets for May 31st. And if we don't see you then, if you're in Europe, then we'll see you in September. And we'll, of course, talk to you in 2 weeks.
Woohoo!
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.